said this would be fun, a show where you call in with your game design problems and we propose possible solutions to those problems. I'm your host, Jeff Warrender, and along with me tonight is veteran game designer and developer Johnny Pack. Johnny, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Glad to have you here. Now, Johnny, one of the things I wanted to ask you about is you're an experienced designer. You've published games like Fistful of Meeples and Coloma and Sierra West and recently Lions of Lydia. But you also work as a full-time game developer. And what interests me is to know how you go about making changes and proposing changes to other people's games as opposed to working on your own games. Do you find that the process is pretty similar, or that you have to use kind of a different approach when it's someone else's game that you're working on, someone else's baby, if you will?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the process is definitely different. One of the beauties of designing your own game, as you probably know, is if you just get a crazy idea, you can tear the game down to nothing or any tiny kernel and then rebuild it as you like. And you can give up, you know, you can kill your darlings as much as you want with that. And I feel like with another person's game, you need to be very clear with them about what they like the best about their own design and what they think is the heart and soul of it, or a pillar that just cannot be removed or else it will ultimately lack something in their mind. And so I like to try to identify those things with them and make sure that my interpretation is in line with their interpretation and that those strengths are in the forefront and still there, and then see what's negotiable, like some of the stuff is tertiary systems or whatever else like that, and just kind of see where things can bend. And and of course propose, you know, some stuff. It's like if a game only is three to five players, you know, we ask, is it possible to make a two-player mode and things like that, and kind of open up that discussion and see where things are before just going in there implementing a bunch of changes, and then they come back after the first iteration, go, what did you do? So I think just being forward and also trying to identify, you know, the most fundamental thing of a design is important.
And do you have a lot of free rein in that process to steer that conversation in that process? Or are you sort of also acting as a middleman between yourself or between the designer and the publisher and trying to make sure they're both happy with what the outcome is?
Yeah, that's interesting, because the relationship can vary. So sometimes I will be kind of the liaison or whatever between the designer and a publisher. And I work with a lot of European publishers. So if I'm working with, say, like American designers, likely we'll be closer in time zones and be able to take longer calls and discuss things and then relay some of that. But then on other projects, it's could be different, where the publisher talks to the designer and does all that stuff, and I don't talk to them as often, and definitely not in such a constructive sort of way. It's like, you know, a chat on Facebook or whatever else and be friendly. But as far as actually working on mechanics and stuff, it will be kind of an internal process. And then once it's been refined to a degree, they will then present it back to the designer for like an approval process. So those are kind of the two main methods that I've experienced, and they both have their pros and cons. And it just depends on what works with the publisher and also what works with the designer based on schedules and things like that.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. All right. Well, I think with your experience, I think you'll definitely be able to help our callers on the show today. And it looks like we have a call on line one from Hagerstown, Maryland. We have Corinne and Matt. Corinne and Matt, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you so much.
Hi.
All right. Yeah, thanks for being on with us. You're on with Jeff and Johnny Pack, the J team. And why don't you guys start by telling us a little about the design that you're working on, kind of its history, where it's at, and, you know, what we might be able to talk about to help you guys out.
Okay.
We've been working on this game, Cave Painters of Lasco, for 5 years now. And we've had a lot of different iterations of it, some complete overhauls, and we're at a stage where we're just not sure how to tell how close we are to publishable.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about the game, or Corinne, if you want to expand on that, that's fine too.
Sure. So I fell in love with cave paintings in high school, and Lasco was the cave that I was focused on. And then looking at it and doing research, it was like, we could just pretty quickly see pieces coming together, mechanisms, just based on the theme. And so we just compiled a game within a day, the whole game, played it with our family. Wow. And it was awesome. It was actually not horrible, but it was like very, you know, obviously amateur, needed a lot of work. And so we started there. And so we're definitely passionate about it. We love the theme. And I think it, like with any game, there's that balance between having a solid theme and having mechanics that make the game playable and not just great theme. Mm-hmm. And so we've been kind of working on that balance, and I think we have some differences sort of in how we want to achieve that. But overall, we've just kind of hit a place where we are both kind of stuck.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the basic mechanisms that we're working on that I think are pretty core to the game is a painting system by drawing cubes out of a bag and applying them to a painting tile.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a set collection aspect to that. And then we've got an engine system that, you know, increases your ability to do that faster and better throughout the game.
So it's action selection. You have a palette in front of you with everything showing you what your options are, you know, paint, applications, tools, things like that. And so it just kind of brings in that theme, and then a board that's just, it's the Caves of Lascaux, which is really cool. It's like, right. You know, you look at it and you just, you know, it's a...
That's cool. It sounds so thematically very strong, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing, that I suspect a lot of people are at least superficially similar with these great, or familiar, I should say, with these great cave paintings. So do you find that players come into the game and... feel like their experience is like, oh, I'm learning something about this that I didn't really know? Or do you feel like they are expecting it to reinforce something that they are already familiar with, if that question makes sense?
For the most part, people do know about, at the very least, they know about cave paintings.
Yeah.
Sometimes, I would say 50% of the time probably, they know the caves themselves, but I'm pretty sure we've taught every playtester something about the caves that they didn't know before.
Yeah.
And we've been going back every time we do a reboot of the core game. We go back and we re-research everything and go, okay, well, what can we do with this mechanism? What can we do with this theme, this aspect of the theme? We keep going back to, you've got the paintings themselves, you've got the pigment that you're applying on the wall, you've got the walls, you've got the pigment or the tools that you use to apply the pigment, you've got the lights that you use to light the cave. Those are our core elements, and how do we make those shine mechanically?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And we just keep hitting a point where we're just like, we can't make this game any better. Every version of the game has been really tightly integrated. And so whenever we reach a point where we're like, we can't make this work, we're like, okay, well, let's tweak something.
Yeah.
And so we try to tweak one thing.
And then it all kind of collapses.
But it ripples. Yeah, it's either House of Cards or a ripple in a pond or something. But like, we make one tiny change to one mechanism, and then we're like, well, that affects these three mechanisms.
Yeah.
So we try to propagate that change to those mechanisms so they work in conjunction with it. And then it's like, well now these two mechanisms over here don't work. And because of this change we hear, this original mechanism that we just tweaked didn't work. And so it just keeps going until finally the game's different.
Yeah.
It's not the same game at all.
Yeah.
Sure.
And that's one major problem we've had with it, is at every turn we're tweaking to the point where it's unrecognizable.
Yeah.
Because of how tightly integrated it is. Mm-hmm. And it's just getting to the point where we're like, we could just call this game finished and try to publish it. or try to get it published. We're not going to publish it ourselves. But we know it's not there.
So let me, okay. So let me ask one more question just for information gathering purposes. How do players win the game? What is it that they are trying to do? It sounds like, I mean, obviously complete paintings, but is that how you get points in the game? You complete a painting card and that gives you some points and
The idea of not incentivizing paintings with the points themselves, and that never seemed to shine.
We wanted the focus to be on the paintings, because that's like the glorious part is painting something, and then you feel like you're doing something worth points, getting points for. And we have a system where, as sort of an engine aspect of the game, you paint a smaller painting and then it affects a bigger masterpiece that's at, you know, the top of a cave, and you're working towards it through the game. And so you're gaining points as you paint the smaller paintings, but you're working towards bigger points that you'll ultimately get if the masterpiece is completed. And then we also have the light system adding like bonus points. So the more you light, the more you can have a quality painting. Therefore, you have points that come from lighting as well.
And then it's, we have a score track that it doesn't have a fixed ending point. There are certain conditions in the game that can lower the end game condition. So it's like, as you're gaining points, the end of the game is coming down to meet you.
That's good.
And the speed at which that happens is dependent on different things you do throughout the game.
That's cool.
Neat. Yeah, I really want to play this game. This sounds this sounds really great. It's it sounds like you put a lot of work into this and have some really nice ideas and some really sophisticated ideas here. So
Thank you.
Sounds like the question or the challenge is twofold. Like, can this find a place in the marketplace? And if it could, how would you know that it was ready for that point? Is that essentially what your question boils down to?
We've got some issues with game length, obviously. That's going to happen a lot during playtesting. And then we also have some issues with people have described it as like mechanical. Like, once you get set on a path, you kind of have to see that path through until you like you start a painting and you have to paint that painting until it's done. On the one hand, that's just you're painting the painting. That's what it's going to take. But also, we don't want people to feel stuck in the process. And that's with this current version. So that's not a what part of the main issue of is this publishable and how do we know how close we are? And we keep hearing that this is you know, would have been publishable 10 years ago. This would have been publishable 5 years ago. And it feels like the goalposts are constantly moving. You know, game design is getting better and better and better as far as its standards.
We're just lagging.
Allegedly. I mean.
Jeff and I both love older Euros from 10 years ago. So there's nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that. So, Johnny, what do you think about? Let's look to your wisdom to at least answer part of this question, which is to say, at what point does a game get handed off to you for development? At what point in its life is it pretty much buttoned up and bulletproof, and you're just going to tweak some numbers, or are there some things that work but maybe a couple of problems you're going to have to solve? What's typical for what you see?
I have yet to see the perfect turnkey submission where somebody's got something exactly the state you want it, and it fits the footprint and the whatever the art style is going to be in component list and all the things a publisher's looking for, and then it's like, oh, this is perfect, we got it, you know, give it some artwork and publish it. So I think everything is going to need some work. And so even a game that's, you know, 80% or 90% or 100% done when it's handed off to a publisher will actually get a significant amount of work done to it that after it's been acquired by them. And so knowing that, I would say as a, you know, like freelance designers, you don't necessarily have to get your games to 100%. It can be most of the way there, or you could have get it to 80%, but then you could give three different versions of what 100% might look like that you would be happy with. And you say, if we wanted to make this a little bit more of a gateway game, this is how we could streamline it. If we needed to make this a bigger, say, Kickstarter game that's going to have a lot of stuff added to it, here's a bunch of tap-in points where you could make additional content, replayable stuff, deluxified components. And then, you know, you could look at the different footprint size and scale to that. And if somebody said, we want to make an expert game and we want to make this, as say, as heavy as possible, you know, how crazy can you go with integrating all those systems? And so it becomes really, really thinky. And you might even get some, like a sideball saying, hey, we prefer low interaction puzzly games. And this game, say, is mostly that. Well, they might want it to be more of that. Or they might say that they want it to have more interaction points. And all of a sudden you go, well, the game's great, but player interactions on the low side, and this particular publisher wants a little bit more of that. So you might need to go through your whole design again and see what are the natural interaction points, if any, right now, and then increase those or see what that would do. And the way it sounds like you're talking about is your game has there's systems that talk to other systems in the game, and if you change one thing, it's going to have ripple effects, like you said. I think that's a great sign, because there's kind of like the mental game you can play thought experiment, where it's like, if you showed some playtesters, you know, 2/3 of your game and left the other third in the box and they didn't know about it, and then they played it and didn't feel like something was missing, then your game's not really that integrated. And so it sounds like you're not having any problems with that. And so that's a strong thing. And even though it's frustrating to rework your game over and over again, it might be possible that you kind of save a state of each of those like 80% that you're just talking about. And when you're doing your pitch, let the publisher know how flexible you are with those different ones, and even be open to the idea of a synthesis of the two that they like best, or even a new idea that you and them might come up with together.
Yeah.
That's great. Great input.
Yeah. And I think on the other hand, you also want to have a sense for what the kernel of the design is. Like, what are the aspects that you're non-negotiable about? You know, what to you is the core, what's the beating heart of the design? And it sounds like you have an idea of what that is. And I think, you know, I'm not myself a big, you know, you've got to have a hook person, but then I'm not very well published, so maybe you shouldn't listen to me. But I think that really having a sense for what is integral to the game is both helpful in how you present the game, but also in the changes you're willing to make and the changes you're not willing to make. Mm-hmm. What I hear from you guys, and that I like very much, is that you've tried a lot of different things. I think it's very easy for designers to just get kind of stuck into a groove where it's like, all right, this is going along okay, and I'm just going to, you know, tweak the numbers a little bit and try to refine some things a little bit. And it sounds like you have just ripped this thing apart and put it back together a lot of times. The thing that I'm interested in is, in the process of doing that, what has been sort of the typical number of repeat sessions that you've run with a particular iteration? Because I'll get to the question that I'm really interested in, which is, do you guys as players, or do your players find that they are growing in their understanding of and appreciation for the game as they play it repeatedly? Because I think if that's the case, that's a very good sign that a game is close to done and close to being publishable and something special that people would want to own in their collection.
Yeah, that gets into another issue we have, where we just don't get a lot of playtests. Pretty far from any other people to playtest with, any other designers or any design groups to playtest with. And so a lot of times, by the time we bring the game back to playtest group X, we've already shown it to playtest group Y and Z, and then back to A, and tweaked it enough that playtest group X isn't playing the same game they played last time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So as far as this version, now we've had versions in the past, back when we only had one little girl running around the house instead of three, we had a lot of time to have playtests.
Yeah, we got up to 50, at least 50 playtests of I would say our, you know, version that we had about 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, wow. Okay.
There definitely was some emergent gameplay there, and it,
yeah.
I was really enjoying that version, but that one, like, talking about completion, I don't think anyone could have gotten that game to 100%.
Yeah.
That's what we ended up, it was probably a year and a half into designing it, and we'd had it stable for 50 playtests, and we were just looking at it, and we're like, here are the problems that we're seeing emerging, and there's no way to fix it in this system.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, we did see emergent gameplay. It was interesting to see that develop. But then since then, we haven't been able to get that many playtests.
Yeah,
play
there hasn't been a stable. Yeah. We haven't had a stable enough game to really be able to fully answer your question there.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. So I would say, I would say that's definitely a thing to look for, is that even, you know, even amongst the two of you or whatever, I think I'm in a similar situation to you guys, where playtest night is just too infrequent a thing. And if I only playtested my game at playtest night, the progress would be glacial. So I have to just bash together a solo test or a two-player test, grab anybody who will play, and just try some stuff out. And I think you can make progress that way, but I think you're sort of... In that way, you're sort of chasing a feeling, right? You're sort of chasing the sensation of, you know, does this feel like what I want it to feel like when I'm playing this game? Mm-hmm. And at least at that level, at the gut level, I mean, do you feel like it's converging towards giving you at least the experience you were hoping this game would create? It's easy to trick yourself and because of wishful thinking and everything.
Yeah.
I think that's the issue. We've played it a lot between each other, and we felt like we had hit that point, and then we got it on Tabletop Simulator. This was like right as COVID was starting. We felt like we hit that mm-hmm. point, just playing between ourselves, and then we got it on Tabletop Simulator and had three different play tests on there, and all of them went down in a different way. Same game, and they each went crashing and burning in a different way.
Yeah.
And I think Tabletop Simulator was partially to blame.
Sure.
Yeah, for sure.
Especially with the game length. But it was kind of like, whoa, we didn't see that coming.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, Tabletop Simulator is a tricky one because it's going to give you a lot of false tests as far as the ergonomics and information design goes, and then game length. A lot of things, it's like, I don't know, it's like playing a song in slow motion or something at like, you know, 30 BPM. It's just not going to feel the same as playing something at tempo where there's a rhythm and stuff to it. And kind of being handicapped to the degree where you don't have both hands that you can do and interact with. So, you know, take the Tabletop Simulator test with a grain of salt, but also look at, you know, if you're very focused on what the problem is you're trying to identify, if it's a numbers problem, if it's, you know, balancing, stuff like that, you can still do that stuff on Tabletop Simulator relatively well, but it's the feel stuff and the tempo stuff and the momentum stuff that's going to probably suffer the most. But if you're confident in that end, then just know that, and you know, let your playtesters know that this isn't about that right now. This is about something, a system that you're trying to, the gears, you know, and even if they are in slow motion, you want to see if the gears click, and you still be able to tell that.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right, that you're really looking for, especially if you're teaching new people the game, which it sounds like these tests were. I mean, that's one kind of play testing, and it's important. You want to get a sense for how quickly people can internalize things that you as the designer knew even before you built the prototype. You know, can they get to your level of facility with the game, at least maybe by the end of the first time through the game, you know, and do they want to play it a second time? You can't, you also don't have to rely on first time players for a true test of the game's, you know, quality or its viability as a, you know, it's you do, I think you do have to trust your own experience and your own instincts as well. But having said that, when a publisher first playtests the game, it's their first time playing it and they have to really like it. So, you know, it is useful to figure out what first time players think about the game, though, of course. Sure. So that does have some value for sure. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Corinne and Matt, I hope that some of this conversation has been helpful to you guys in taking the next step with this game. It sounds like you definitely have something on your hands here. It's just a matter of figuring out how much more to do with it. But I think it's also a matter of figuring out, who is the right publisher who's going to catch the vision for what you're doing. I heard about a game recently that, and I won't name names or anything, but the designer had presented it to the publisher, just a couple of months after they had started working on it. And the publisher just loved the idea. The game was a couple of years away from being done enough to be publishable, but the idea was so attractive to the publisher that they either signed it or stayed in touch with the designer or whatever. I think that's what you want here, just someone who's going to catch the vision for what you're doing. I think the game world is showing us that, this is a really opportune time for themes that are, a little unusual, off the beaten path, but things that resonate with us, things that are part of the human story, part of the grand human experiment and everything, experience. And and I think you guys have something like that you're working on here. So I could easily see this, and based on the gameplay you've described, I could easily see this really finding an audience and an enthusiastic audience. I don't know. What do you think about that, Johnny? What's your overall take on what Matt and Corinne are working on here?
Well, one thing obviously is if somebody likes, say, the mechanics, then they want to turn it into painting in the Renaissance or something, I would say no. It sounds like you've been inspired by a particular path and it's informed your decisions. Yeah. And if they said, hey, let's turn these torches into something else and mechanically change all this, and you're actually drawing comic books and something like that, it's like, well, they might have an IP that they want to, that they've acquired, and they want to change that stuff. And supposedly designers should be open to the idea of retheming stuff in order to up your odds for getting signed. But in this case, I would stick with it because it's what inspired the game. And I don't know if you want to tell that story 5 years from now, 10 years from now. Well, actually, this game was about something I was really passionate about, but this final version has this theme on it that I don't really care for as much, but at least some of the mechanics are still there. That might not be a story you want to tell. So one of those pillars I was talking about would be that you are married to this theme and you do love it, and you'd like the developer and the publisher to enrich that theme and make it in the forefront of the product. So that's what I would say that for sure.
Great.
Okay. Well, hey, thank you guys so much for calling into the show, and definitely call us back and let us know how things are going along with the game. But we wish you the best of success with it.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate it.
Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. We'll talk soon. Well, that's all the time we have for tonight. I want to thank our guest, Johnny Pack. You can find Johnny's games, Coloma, Sierra West, Fistful of Meeples, Lions of Lydia, and others at wherever fine games are sold. And you can find my book, You Said This Would Be Fun, at Amazon or DriveThruRPG. If you'd like to call the show or just have general comments or questions, you can reach us at jeff@belltowergames.com. Until next time, thanks for listening.